What then now we are going to do, as I'm of the understanding that all of us do have the copy of the agenda. More members, and if we are running short, we will then, people shall share. So we share, but I hope all members do have the copy of that agenda. As we agreed yesterday, I will slightly amend the agenda. As is still the continuation of our meeting in terms of presentation from yesterday, but today we have got an office of what we will do in terms of the house rules for those that may be coming in front of the committee for the first time. The house rules are: our phones are to be on silent. Secondly, we don't take pictures. It's only people that are designated to take pictures. Unfortunately, we don't have the interpretation system, so we will use English. We can't say people may speak the language of their choice. So that's what we'll do. I don't want to propose to the meeting that one. We won't do a full-scale invitation for now. At an appropriate time, those people that are going to be presenting will then introduce themselves. That would be one. Two, I get a message that there are members that are going to leave early. I don't know, early is early as what? Whether is it early before 1 o'clock? Can I get an indication? Thank you, honorable members. We will, so that we are able not to run the risk of adopting our minutes, apologize to the AG's office. Can we, if all of us do have the copy of the minutes, can we quickly deal with that? And then after that, so that we are then able to. Do all members have the copy of the minutes? Can I get an indication? Do we all have the copy of the minutes? Okay. If we then have those, can we start with page one? Those will be the minutes of the 21st of August. Page one. Page two. Thank you. please. Reverend Kako, are you? Oh. Kado. Okay. I thought you wanted to. Page 4. Is there any question, comments, or can we formally get a mover, Honorable Brigham?
Okay, well, I propose, thanks.
Yeah, I, Honorable Brigham, propose that we accept the minutes of the reflection. Honorable Wick? We're going to be getting a, I'm not quite sure, I was just checking with the secretariat that for 30 minutes presentation, can you call that an induction? Well, English is not my first language. I don't want to propose I don't want to say information, or whatever, but what is important is that the office of the AG is requested to just come. It's not a, they are still going to come to the committee, but just to take the committee through, to take the members through what is then their mandate in terms of this committee. For the benefit of the members and everybody, I would appreciate if whoever is leading the team to introduce yourselves. And I find it quite a coincidence, young ladies. It's not about ladies' month, but it's just about young ladies. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. Just a way of introduction, my name is Haboko Mati. I'm the business executive in the Auditor General of South Africa, responsible for the labor portfolio, among others. I have two colleagues with me. On my left, the lady that will be taking us through the presentation is Michelle Mageman. She's the deputy business executive in my portfolio. And on my right, I have Ms. Mudiei Skosana. She's a senior manager responsible for labor portfolio as well, particularly the compensation fund. I think, Chair, for us, it's just to share an overview of what we do as the office and how we fit in to your processes. We've shared a presentation, but we'll try and just touch on the key mandate and the key activities that would assist in the committee appreciating how we come in to the picture. And we're hoping that this will be the first of the sessions that we would then partner with you going forward. If you could allow me, I would ask Michelle just to take us through the presentation. And I'll follow your lead in terms of the interactions from the floor. Thank you very much. Okay. Thank you, Kabo. Thank you, Chairperson. I will be brief. I'll definitely touch on the key elements. The presentation is to just give you a brief overview of our mandate, our mission, the past audit outcomes, and also give you a brief overview of the expansion to our mandate and how it impacts on the audit and findings that we raise. Okay. So our mission as the Auditor General, we are a constitutional mandate. And as a supreme audit institution, we exist to strengthen our country's democracy by enabling oversight, accountability, and governance in public sector through auditing, and we thereby build public confidence. In terms of our mandate does come from the Constitution. We also have our own public Audit Act. All right, thank you. On page 4 of the presentation, we highlight where our mandate comes from, the Constitution, which is Section 138, where it gives us the mandate that we must audit and report on the country's account, on the accounts and financial statements and financial management of government institutions. We also have an act which entails how we go about implementing our mandate, and you'll find our audit specific on Section 20 of the Act, where we say that the AG must prepare an audit report containing an opinion on the three areas, the financial statement, compliance with laws, and we also then report on the performance against predetermined objectives, which is your performance information. We do have Section 5 of the PAA that allows us to do discretionary audits, which is investigations and performance audits. However, we don't have opinions on those audits. In delivering our mandate, as I already alluded to in terms of our Act, we audit the financial statements, we do the performance reporting, compliance with laws, and the value add audit work. We report findings to the accounting officers, authorities, with recommendations. This is through the management reports. We then report the audit opinions and material findings to legislation and council, legislator, as well as the portfolio committee. We then generate commitments from all key stakeholders to address root causes for where there's poor audit outcomes. So that's when we deliver our mandate. On page 6 of the presentation, we have what we do as the AG, and then also in red, I just want to highlight what we don't do. Okay, what we do is that we provide assurance that the financial statements are free from material misstatements. So if you look at the red, this will tell you what we don't do. We don't guarantee the completeness and accuracy of all of the information. So we don't audit everything and give an opinion on everything. However, we look that the financials are free from what we say is material misstatements. We then report on the usefulness and reliability of information in the APR. However, we don't provide assurance that service delivery has been achieved, because we'll look at what you've planned and we say, have you reported on what you've planned, and have you reported that you did not achieve targets? But we don't say service delivery was achieved. We report on material non-compliance with key legislation, but we don't provide assurance that all applicable laws and regulations have been complied with. We've got a copy for the minute. Okay. We also identify key internal control deficiencies that should be addressed, but we don't identify fraud. However, if there is fraud, we do follow up. But it's not our intention to go in and identify fraud. In terms of the audit process, on slide number 7, in the beginning of the audit, we do a risk assessment. We then respond to the risk in the second phase of the audit process, and then we report. In terms of risk assessment, we agree on terms of engagement. So we agree on the responsibilities in terms of the different parties, so the accounting officers and accounting authorities' responsibilities, as well as the AG's responsibilities and the objectives on the audit, and the access to information that is required, and when the reports will be delivered. Then we plan the audit. During the planning, we understand the environment that we are going to audit, and we assess if there's any risks that are posed, and we then do the risk assessment procedures. Once we've identified the risks, we then develop we've developed now the audit procedures, and we go in and then we audit. Once we finalize the audit, we prepare a management report as per our mandate, and then audit report as per the mandate. So that is the audit process in totality. On the next slide, I'm going to give you what the different audit outcomes are. We have five different audit outcomes. We have what we call a clean audit outcome. This is where we say your financial statements are free from material misstatements, and there are no material findings on the reported performance information, and there was no findings on non-compliance with legislation. So basically, you've got no material non-compliances in that entity. Then we have what we call a financially unqualified opinion with findings. So here we'd say that your financial statements, so you've reported everything on your financial statements, all the information is on your financial statements, so there's no material misstatements, there's no errors on your financial statements. But there are material findings that have been raised. So the material findings can either be on your performance information or your compliance with laws and regulations, or on both areas. Okay. So for example, let's say we identify irregular expenditure. You've disclosed it. So we're saying your financial statements are free from material misstatements because you've disclosed that you've got irregular. However, because you have the irregular, you have a non-compliance finding. And that will give you a financially unqualified opinion with findings. Okay. Financially qualified opinion with findings. This is now when your financial statements, there are items on your financial statements that cannot be relied upon. So you haven't disclosed that they've got errors. And this will be a case where it's one or two items that are materially misstated, not that everything on your financials isn't. So we'll highlight that specific area. So if it's assets, we'll put it in to say your assets are qualified. There wasn't sufficient information that we could get, or there's just amounts that have errors in them. And in some instances, you might also have findings on your predetermined objectives and your compliance with legislation, or on both of them. That's for financially qualified. The next two talks about your financial statements in totality. So you have then an adverse opinion. So the difference between the financially qualified and the adverse and the disclaimer is that now it's not just one item that's materially misstated in your financial statements. Now you have various items that are materially misstated. So if you look at your statement of financial position, you have maybe your assets, your liabilities, some of your bank maybe. So most of those items disclosed are materially incorrect. Then you have what we call an adverse opinion. An adverse is where we have material misstatements where we disagree. So the amounts are disclosed, and we're saying those amounts are incorrect. Then you have a disclaimed opinion where it's similar to the adverse. The difference is that the disclaimed opinion is that there's no evidence. So the adverse, we say no, it probably is this amount, and you say, no, it's this amount. The disclaimer is you can't even give us information for what you've disclosed. So we're saying there's insufficient evidence for the, most of the amounts that are disclosed. The last two obviously is not where we want any auditee to be. The last three, we should be aiming for the first two. Okay, the next slide, it just talks about our AEG's work as it relates to that of Parliament, and I'm just going to focus on the last block where we say that AEGSA shares insights on root cause of audit outcomes and recommendations on corrective actions needed for improvement and sustainable outcomes through briefings to the committees. So in the next couple of weeks, we'll be coming through to give the audit outcomes. In there, we'll put in all the recommendations, and we'll also obtain commitments from the committees where audit outcomes need to be improved for those that didn't receive a clean audit outcome. And then we'll follow up in the next years on whether those commitments were achieved. I'm going to take you through the audit outcome trends over the for the last 10 years. Okay, on slide 11, that's where you'll find them. So if you look at the trends for the past 10 years, for national, provincial, and local government, they're all included there. If you can't see up there, I'll just let you know that the green is for clean audit outcomes. The yellow is for the unqualified with findings. The purple is the qualified with findings. The pink is adverse with findings. Disclaimed is red. And the outstanding audit, you'll see in most instances, they're actually on the 2017, 18, and 16, 17 years. Those are blue. In those, if you look at the trend, there hasn't been a significant move over the 10 years in terms of the audit outcomes. We are still sitting with quite a significant number of audits in the areas that we wouldn't want to be, from the qualified right up until the disclaimed with findings. So you'll see there's quite a lot of blue, pink, and red. Mainly actually on the blue and the red, which is not looking that good. The clean is not moving in the direction that we would have wanted, as well as the yellow. So it's very stagnant. On the next slide is on the irregular expenditure. If you look at the history of irregular expenditure, you'll see that it's in an upward movement. For both national and provincial and local government. There's a block there on the left-hand side that shows you the movement for the past 3 years for national, provincial, and local government. And you'll see it's increasing quite significantly over the years. If you go over to the next slide, it's the fruitless and wasteful expenditure. It's having a similar trend, even though the amounts are not as big as the irregular, but it is not going into a good direction, as well as the next slide, which shows you the unauthorized expenditure. Now, if you go to the slide number 15, this one deals with, now that the irregular was identified and it's moving up, what is being done with it? And if you look at the trends, the red shows you that not dealt with. The blue on the graph shows you written off. The yellow shows you what is condoned or authorized. And the green shows you money recovered or transferred to debtors. So just looking at the graph, you can see that most of these non-compliances are not being dealt with. If you look at irregular loans, only $9 million was recovered, 173 billion is still not dealt with, which is a bit concerning. The next slide talks to the root causes of continued poor outcomes that have resulted in the audit outcomes, as well as not dealing with the irregular expenditures and fruitless and wasteful expenditure. And we've put in the root causes. The first one is the disregard for controls, compliance with legislation and AGSA recommendations. And we say this is a slow response to recommendations. We also see capacity gaps in administration, vacancies and instability, that slowed down systematic and disciplined improvements, unethical behavior in administration and by political office leaders, inadequate consequence management. So leadership not being able to act or inconsistent to acting in addressing the transgressions that create a culture of no consequence. So over the years and over the audit period, on slide 17, we've got a few, over and above the audit process, we do some interactions or efforts where we also want to see the improvements. So to give you the red flags before we come in for the audit. And these are regular engagements with accounting officers and executive authorities, so engage with them quite regularly over the audit period. We do what we call a status of records review, which is an early warning system for accounting officers and authorities. There's also roadshows that the Auditor General himself does, and also the teams around the provinces, where we share audit outcomes and recommendations after each cycle. And we do frequent oversight visits with portfolio committees and capacity building engagements like these, also to assist in improving the audit outcomes. But even though we've had these additional efforts even in the previous years, we're not seeing the audit outcomes improving. Okay. So with that said, our mandate then was expanded, so it wasn't changed. We just, when we reach a certain point in the mandate that we had, then we can expand it to go further, not just to report and leave it there. Now we go a bit further. And there's three terminologies that I want to introduce you to, and those are on page 19. We'll talk about material irregularities. We'll then talk about referring material irregularities to relevant public bodies for further investigation. I'm going to touch on taking binding remedial action for failure to implement the AGSA recommendations for material irregularities. And then I'm going to touch on what we say it's an issue, issuing a certificate of debt for failure to implement the remedial action if financial loss was involved. So those are expanding our mandate in that sense. Okay. So I'm going to take you through some definition of what is a material irregularity. So a material irregularity now is any non-compliance with or contravention of legislation, fraud, theft, or a breach of fiduciary duty that is identified during the audit. And The impact of this is resulting or it is likely to result in a material financial loss, the misuse or loss of material public resources, or substantial harm to a public sector institution or the general public. So once we've done the audit and we've identified either a non-compliance, fraud or theft, or a breach of fiduciary duty, once we've done that, we then say what is the impact of these findings now? And we take it through the test of the last paragraph of the definition to say now, does it result in losses or is there substantial harm to the public sector? Then we take it, then we say now it's a material irregularity, and now we're going to take it further. Either we investigate or we start the process of our expanded mandate. Okay, I think these are just examples of material irregularities because these are different from your irregular expenditure. Irregular expenditure, it's just your non-compliance with legislation, or you'll see the examples on the side. However, material irregularity, we take it a further step to say what is the impact of this non-compliance or breach of fraud. So if I take it through the first one only, for example, non-compliance with SEM legislation requiring a competitive bidding process will be a normal non-compliance. It will be irregular expenditure. However, now we say, what is the impact? Is it due to goods being priced above the market value, which will then result in some losses? Then it meets the definition of a material irregularity. Okay, on page 22, it's just also information on in terms of material irregularity versus irregular expenditure, which is also example. Okay, but I'm going to take you through to page 24. The legal obligation of an accounting officer to address an irregularity. Okay, so if an accounting officer or an accounting authority is made aware of an irregularity, which is meeting the definition of material irregularity, the PFMA Treasury regulations and instructions note typically prescribe the following steps to be taken. The accounting officer is supposed to perform a preliminary investigation to determine the facts and collect information on what caused the transgressions, who is responsible, and whether financial loss was suffered. So if applicable, the accounting officer is required to prevent any losses or further losses, institute a formal investigation if there are indications of fraud, corruption, and or criminal conduct. If confirmed, take further action, recover any financial loss, take steps against the responsible official, and recover any financial losses from the responsible official. So these are what the accounting officer's legal obligation in terms of the PFMA are required. So we're not changing what the accounting officers and accounting authorities are required to do. We're just enforcing to make sure that they are complying. So nothing has changed in terms of what is required on their side. So for example, a material on page 25. So on page 25 gives you the process in terms of, it's an example of the process of the material irregularity that caused a material financial loss. So this is where we take a remedial route where we give you recommendations to implement, and these recommendations are legally binding. So for example, if we identified a material irregularity in the 2018-19 audit, by May, we notify the accounting officer of the MI and provide them with 20 working days to respond on actions taken. So once we identify it, We give it to the accounting officer and we give them 20 days to respond. Then we conclude based on the response from the accounting officer in terms of appropriate actions that need to be taken or planned to be taken. Then we look at if those actions were not appropriate, we include the recommendations in the audit report on how the MR, the material irregularity, should be addressed and a specific date. Then we follow up in the, in let's say for example, 6 months is the specific date. We come, we follow up on whether a recommendation has been implemented. If not implemented, we issue a remedial action to the accounting officer that must be implemented by a specific date. So now we enforce our mandate to say now this is a legal instruction that you shall implement the recommendation. Just look at the note there at the bottom. The remedial action remains the steps of the accounting officer. It's legally obligated to take and includes a directive to quantify the financial loss and recover it from the responsible person. Okay, then we continue with the steps. Once the remedial action has now been instructed to the accounting officer, we then follow up whether the remedial action has been implemented. If not implemented, we issue a notice of intention to issue a certificate of debt to the accounting officer or accounting authority. We will then request a written submission on reasons not to issue the certificate of debt within 20 working days. And you'll find these in our regulations as well. Then we then conclude, based on the written submission, whether the certificate of debt process should continue. And if it continues, we request the accounting officer to give oral representation at the MI advisory committee on the reasons not to issue the certificate of debt. And then the process will go in terms of the MI advisory committee. Then eventually we'll conclude, then we'll issue a certificate of debt to the accounting officer, and then we'll recover the said financial loss from that accounting officer or authority. And that's where our mandate then has been expanded up until. In terms of the implementation of our of the expanded mandate, the AGSA on page 27, the AG has a referral with discretion to determine the nature, frequency, and scope of audits. The AG may refer irregularities to a public body for investigation. So, for example, if we identify the material irregularity and we realize that we're not necessarily going to be able to investigate it further, we can also refer it to a public body like your SIU and your Hawks, looking at the nature of that material irregularity. Then we may also make recommendations in the audit report, and we can consult with the AG consulted with SCOAC on the notion of a phased implementation of the material irregularity process. What this means, I'll come to the next slide in terms of what has been done for this current year since the commencement of the mandate. So our expanded mandate commenced on the 1st of April 2019. However, for this financial year, we have what we call a phased-in approach. There are auditees that were selected. This is on page 28 that were selected. Where the implementation will be phased in, and the selection criteria you'll see there at the bottom, where we looked at your audit outcomes over the few years, as well as your irregular expenditure. We also, in terms of the definition, if you remember the definition, we only phased in what we say it's resulted in or likely to result in a material financial loss. So So we're not looking at fiduciary duty, theft, and all of that on the definition. And we've done that throughout the province. So each province has, in terms of the PFMA and the MFMA, has an ODT that we faced the process in. So at this stage, we are reporting on those MI material irregularities in the audit report. The phased-in, on the next page, it just gives you more detail on the phased-in of implementation of the amendment. The phase, so on slide 29, responsibility aligns organizational resources with the demand placed on us by the PFMA. This is what the MI has allowed us to do. So it allowed us to develop an understanding of the required additional resources to implement the powers, to reassess the audit methodology and audit process to accommodate the additional work, to develop and the request content and capacitate the audit teams by extensive training, develop tools and systems to facilitate the remedial action and referral processes, build adequate support capacity, ensure that we are able to fund the additional effort, develop adequate materiality thresholds, and enhance the relevant internal processes to show adequate accountability reporting. And then also ensure that our external our partners are adequately prepared, so we've established relationships with the identified public bodies, for example, your SIUs. Okay, the next slide just gives you a list of the on slide 31, the audits where we've implemented our mandate. Okay, I'm not going to go through those, but it's the major departments, your health, corporate governance, where selected, human settlement. Oversight initiatives in terms of monitoring, and I'm almost at the end, so if you just give me 5 minutes. Oversight initiatives implemented by oversight. We undertook oversight visit to SOUs, held follow-up hearings to address audit findings. We went to advocate for ministerial accountability for poor governance, resuscitated the coordination of the anti-corruption agencies. There are various legislatures implemented sections 139 of the Constitution for administration. The gaps that we have is oversight in-ear monitoring to prevent a reactive approach. Oversight priorities not based on the audit outcomes, internal control failures, limited committee resolutions to debate reports, and opportunity to improve and tracking mechanism for all oversight activities. So these are just the oversight initiatives and the gaps that we've identified that we're going through. Okay, I'm going to go on the last slide that I'll talk to. In terms of the role of oversight and executive authority in terms of assisting with this expanded mandate, in terms of the executive authority, we're saying insist on credible and frequent reporting on state of financial performance management, use reports to monitor direct and support accountability, set the tone for accountability and consequence management by investigating and dealing with any allegations of financial misconduct and irregularities. Share any knowledge of possible material irregularities. Monitor the implementation of the recommendations. Support the referral and remedial process, including the recovery of debt. And if responsible for public body, monitor progress of investigation. In terms of oversight structures, we're saying use the information in the audit report on material irregularities for accountability and oversight purposes, insisting on timeless implementation of recommendations, News reports tables on progress with material irregularities to oversee and influence progress made by public bodies with investigations and executive authorities. And that is what we say the role of oversight and executive authority should be when we're implementing the expanded mandate in terms of recommendations of the material irregularities and to the process of issuing the certificate of debt. With that said, the last slide on page 36 just talks about measures of success, where we're saying these are the accounting officers should be implementing robust financial performance management systems, oversight, and do the oversight and accountability. Commitment and ethical behavior should be demonstrated, and we shouldn't be getting to the expanded mandate stage. And thank you. Thank you, Chair. I think in summary, what we brought to the committee is just to highlight how we fit in. And I think it is clear we express an opinion on the financial statements. We report on the findings in terms of the APP and the APR. We also report on the non-compliances. And I think it's key for us to note that the assurance that we're providing on the financial statements, we call it a reasonable assurance. And I think that would be a bit different from absolute assurance, because we say, based on the information that was given to us, this is how we arrived at the conclusion, not neglecting the fact that there could be other things that would not have been disclosed to us that we may not know of. And on the legislation as well, every year we determine what we call focus areas. So we would indicate to the auditees that these are the key legislation that we look at, appreciating that the prescripts are quite comprehensive. And then on the predetermined objectives, once more it is to say, this is what you planned for, and this is what you've done based on the evidence that we looked at. And that would just be to enable the oversight committees to then hold those responsible accountable in terms of what may or may not have been done. That's in summary. In terms of the PAA in particular, we did a phase-in and labor portfolio was not selected. So the expanded mandate would not have been applicable for the 18-19 financial year for the labor portfolio. And obviously we'll be communicating in terms of the going forward. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, welcoming Minister. Thank you very much, Honourable Members. There is the presentation, more on information, but I see there are two hands, Honourable Inanna, Honourable Baker, in that order.
Chairperson, thank you very much, and good morning to the colleagues, and good morning to the minister. Chairperson, I know that the AG is one of the Chapter 9 institutions with the primary mandate of checking the expenditure or looking after the finances of various departments. On Chapter 11, Chairperson, I saw that the polls that are given there of the percentages about the audit outcomes over the period of 10 years. But what is different about this information, Chairperson, is that we are not sure which of these reflect which province or which municipality. Because it says that the audit outcomes over the period of the past 10 years, national, provincial, and local government. But we don't know which are you referring to. For instance, you said about 10% unqualified with no findings, 50% of qualified with findings, and so on. You don't know which province, which municipality, or is it national that you are talking about. I would appreciate if we are having the breakdown of what actually this is referring to. Secondly, Chairperson, on the information that will be given, I would tell them how do these adverse findings affect the poor service delivery, and what might be the motives to have these adverse findings. Is there any chaperone the audit? Well, okay. Is there anywhere where we can have the corrective measure of this has been identified, because the period of 10 years is very too long, that a particular problem has been picked up, was identified, and therefore corrective measures were taken. Is there a reference that we can be showed of what is it that was done to rehabilitate, to mentor, to assist that municipality or the province? Because we are at the moment affected the whole of South Africa of the poor service delivery and the consistent protests that are happening. Thank you, sir.
Honourable Baker.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Excellent report, and thank you for enlightening us, because this key expansion of your mandate is fantastic, I think, for just about everyone in the country, and we need to recommend that this be followed very carefully, and also to applaud Parliament for ensuring that the mandate was extended like that, because we've had many years of failure in our own area and our own department within the Department of Labour, and hopefully this will put this right. I see you can issue a certificate of debt in terms of slide 19 for the failure implementation to implement the remedial action. Who does the debt go to? Does it go to the department, or are you going to target individuals? Are you looking at the accounting officer? We've got to have someone that's responsible. We've got the minister sitting here. I'd like you to tell us that the minister would be responsible, and he would be the one who would have to put his hand into his own pocket if necessary, so that he'll ensure it never happens in his department, that's for sure. If I can go on a little bit in terms of the impact, you've now issued the certificate of debt. Where do we go from there? Once you've got a certificate, who collects? How do you actually implement from that next stage? You can have a certificate of debt which could sit around for years. What do you do with it? I'd like you to tell me that. The other thing is, of course, this process that you've outlined to us, from what I can see, it takes about 18 months, almost 2 years, in fact. We as an oversight, one of our mandates that we have as an oversight committee, the portfolio of employment and labour, how do we actually plug into that? Do we know at any point that you've actually started this process? Do you report back to us and tell us that you have started the process, we've now warned them that there's a problem and they need to get it right? Do we know about it? Will our chairperson be kept in the picture throughout that process? Because there's no good telling us, and I mean, every year what happens is the AG comes to this committee, like they come to all their committees, and then they tell us that there's been a failure and there's been irregular expenditure, but that's once it happened. You pick it up quite early on in the process, because you'll be doing ongoing audits, I presume, and would you then report to this chairperson of this portfolio or any portfolio committee and tell them what's going on? Just in terms of the your ability to do this, obviously this expanded mandate is going to be putting a lot of pressure on the AG. You're going to need more staff, more resources, everything. Because this now gives you, this expanded mandate gives you possibly 30 to 40% more work, from what I understand. And you're going to have to now take it beyond just the audit, because in the past you said, okay, failure, and that's the end of us. But now you're going to take through another 18-month process with all the departments. I want to know if you've got the staff and the resources, and has Parliament come forward and given you that extra resource to actually perform in terms of your mandate? And then I look at slide 31. Why have you left out the Department of Employment and Labour? It's one of the key departments, and we're very proud of our department. Hopefully you won't leave us out again in terms of looking at us. Thank you, Madam Chair, I appreciate it.
Okay.
Thank you so much. Thank you for the comments. I'm going to take a few of them and then the specifics I'll leave to Michelle just to close it up. Let's start with a question that says the specifics in terms of the breakdown. I think we can provide that. It's, I think the appreciation was is the whole country, so it's quite a list of ODTs to have tried to condense in a slide. But if you go through the general report of the AGSA, the specifics are tailored out there. So there will name ODTs by name, you know, right from the local government until national. But Chair, if it is required, I can make an extract of that general report and share with the members. In terms of how does this affect the service delivery, and I think it goes back to our mandate, if you look at the first slide that we provided, where we say we are enabling oversight. And I think from our perspective, we are of the view that if the reporting is done transparently, meaning we are able to transparently as a department, as an entity, to report on exactly where the money went, we are enabling all the decision makers to then conclude on whether this thing is taking the right direction or not. So our role as the office, it is to encourage the entity to report transparently so that they do say if they did not deliver, that I did not deliver, and enable everybody else to then do what they need to do in terms of the legislation. Now, in terms of the, I think there was a question around, is there a reference to rehabilitation that took place? And I think that talks to the efforts from the AGSA perspective in terms of how did we support some of these entities. There's a slide that talked to that as well, in terms of what have we been doing to partner with the ODTs and support them. And one key initiative that we had in the previous years, we used to call it the status of the, sorry, the key control assessment, and now we call it the status of the records review. We go in there and we say to the ODTs, in our assessment, these are the areas that we need to close and attend to. By the time we give you an audit opinion, we're quite clear that we had indicated, if you have lack of capacity, we do workshop where you require us to do the workshop. If there's an interpretation issue from the legislation perspective, we'll advise you to also bring in Treasury on board, so that everybody else is on the same page. So we do those interactions to try and support the ODTs in here. There was a question around slide 19 in terms of who does the certificate of debt go to? Who is targeted? And we are actually following the PFMA. The PFMA would then talk to the accounting officer. So in our processes, we would then go and say section 38, if you are a department, require the accounting officer to prevent the incurrence of irregular, fruitless, and wasteful. And should that be that it had taken place in an unfortunate event, the accounting officer is empowered from the PFMA perspective to then investigate and take action. When we come in, we start asking the very same question. Did you take action? Did you recover where the fiscus was lost? If it happens that that did not take place, we recommend that do that. If we come back and you haven't done that, then the certificate of debt is issued to the accounting officer. So in summary, we say we're targeting the accounting officers. But obviously, understanding and appreciating that the PFMA had empowered them to then do what they are required to do. The collection thereof, I think that is where we rely on the support of the executives, you know, the ministers, together with the portfolio committees. Because once we've issued that certificate of debt, the expectation is that the money must be recovered from the individual back into the fiscus. We then ask the ministers, together with Parliament, to support us in that process of making sure that the loss is made good. In terms of how does the audit in the portfolio committee support the process, or are we going to keep the portfolio committee chair in the loop? Yes, we intend to. So when we do the audit outcome as well, for the instances where there would have been a material irregularity, we then have a particular slide and information that we indicate what are the recommendations or the remedial action that we've put on the floor, and then we then request the portfolio committee to support us. In between the quarter, we are able to come through and just indicate once more in terms of the progress. So yes, the success is dependent on the support of the portfolio committee. We will be keeping the portfolio committee in the loop. In terms of our ability to do this, yes, it is quite an expanded mandate as we see it. And that's the reason why, together with SCOAG and the Standing Committee on the Auditor General, that we had agreed to do a phase-in. And the phase-in was merely to assist us in making sure that we gear ourselves properly, appreciating the magnitude of this that we need to do. But you will see that in the slide that we're talking to the referral process, we did not want to duplicate some of the mandates that are already there for other investigative bodies. So there we refer the matters that needs to go to the Hawks for the Hawks to look into it. And the matters that require public protector will do that, and the matters that require the SIU advisor and the likes. So the intention is not to duplicate any other state agency that currently is trusted to do what they're supposed to do. Ours is to make sure that those processes are followed properly. In terms of why did we leave Labour out, I think there was a particular slide that indicated a criteria of how we selected the auditees that we face in for 1819. And for the year that we face in, we focus mainly on the entities that had a very high irregular expenditure. So we needed to start somewhere. So we said, let's start dealing with the entities and the departments who have high amounts of irregular expenditure and they have not necessarily been dealing with them. So those are the people that we face in. But we did so ensuring that all spheres of governments have got representation. So that you see we have a combination, we have the departments, we have municipalities, in some instances we may have the entities. So yes, going forward we'll still be considering how do we then bring everybody else. Okay. So that is my input. I think I covered it all. Thank you so much.
No, thank you. Thank you very much. I think they've covered it all. But also, I think this presentation is also empowering us when you then, because you are still going to come back now focusing to the sector, which is labor, and then we will be able, having looked into this document with your added mandate, and then we'll then be able to make that. But it is also, it's a process that is now charging us with a more focused, not that Parliament was never focused, but as the committee we are now empowered to really not mix our words, as long as we're not going to be hostile towards the executive and the accounting officer in terms of the DG as a team, but now we're then going to be able to discharge our responsibility in a manner that is then going to ensure that we the sector is able to move forward, and the executive is also empowered in the process and the accounting officer. So it's not them and us. It's a process that is empowering us, but a process that is also empowering the executive, for together we are then able to improve the state of the sector. So thank you very much. You are coming back in the near future, and then it's at that time that we will interrogate. But what is important is what you said. If we want the more expanded information about the ages, right, province, national, municipality, I think they are, your office is right across the road. Members, feel free to get that whole volume that is then going to be. But we will come back to you if really we will need that. And thank you very much. Until we meet again. Sure. Honourable members, now we go back to the presentations in terms of the department. The entity that is to prevent, to make a presentation to us is the Commission for Conciliation and Mediation. Commission for Conciliation, Mediation and Arbitration, which is better known as CCMA. Where are they? Thank you. Can you introduce yourself?
Yes. Good morning, Honorable Minister, Honorable Chair, and Honorable Members. My name is Harun Dakhat. I'm a Senior Commissioner responsible for collective bargaining at the CCMA, and I'm standing in for the CCMA Director, and I'm accompanied by my colleague who is the Chief Financial Officer of the CCMA as well. And on that note, I believe that there was an apology, but let me apologize again for the CCMA Director being unavailable to attend today. A humble apology. Just taking through the performance results in terms of the annual performance plan, if we proceed to slide 5. Okay. I'm not going to, Honorable Chair, with your permission, not going to go into too much detail, but as can be gleaned from slide 5, there were 4 strategic objectives for the CCMA. Of the first 3 strategic objectives, all annual performance plan targets were achieved with the exception of one activity in terms of one strategic objective in terms of optimizing the organization. So out of the plans, 19 targets, 18 of those targets were achieved or exceeded, representing a 95% performance rate of the organization. I think if I could refer you to slide 6, there was one target where the CCMA was unfortunately unable to achieve that particular target, and that target relates to the percentage of achievement, which was 98% of all registered cases that were heard within 30 days for the first event at the CCMA. So out of the numbers of registered cases, 88%, which represents 136,857 of 155,351 registered cases. These were heard within 30 days, and these excluded matters where parties agreed to extend the conciliation period. The reason for non-achievement on this target was due to the case management system of the CCMA's limited capacity to extract and populate information on conciliations that should have been heard within 30 days, but also the particular target referred to all registered cases. This has since been corrected and would refer to all conciliable cases, because all matters that are referred to the CCMA are not necessarily conciliated at the first event. So that's the one area of non-performance in terms of one of the three key strategic targets. If we could move to slide 8. Now, the comparison of the percentage of performance year on year and quarter on quarter, taking us back over the past 4 years. As can be seen, if we go back to the financial year to 2015-2016, the CCMA recorded a 91% performance rate. In 2016-2017, that moved to 84%. It dropped. There was a slight drop in performance. And in the last time, sorry, in the 2017-2018 financial year, that's picked up to 87%. I've been privileged to be at the CCMA for many years, and looking at the performance on the past financial year, it's at the record high of the CCMA, recorded at 95% on our planned performance targets. And may I add as well is that being there for so many years, this has been the highest level of performance recorded at the CCMA since inception. Slide 8, which I won't dwell on for too long. It's just a comparative with the last financial year and the last quarter. As you can see, that we had 15 planned targets, and we achieved 13 of those planned targets, which represented an achievement rate of 87%. When we look to the last financial year, at the quarter 4 performance, we had 19 planned targets, and 18 of those were achieved, and once again, this represented a 95% performance rate. If we move on to the next slide, which should be slide 9, I'm just going to highlight certain areas in terms of our dashboard, and some of these speaks to the government outcomes as well. If you look at the first the first item, you can see that 193,732 cases were referred to the CCMA over this past financial year. This is an increase from the previous financial year. The numbers listed there as well, it has been slightly over 186 cases that had been referred from the previous financial year. In terms of delivery, the CCMA on average took 24 days to deal with conciliation cases as compared to the legislated target of 30 days. So we're well within the legislated target of ensuring that these matters are scheduled within 30 days. On average as well, the CCMA took 68 days to deal with arbitration cases. We have set ourselves a measure of 60 days. It's slightly above the measure, but still well within. Generally, we try and do this well within a 90-day period, but our target we've set well above that is 60 days, but we've managed to ensure that arbitration matters are dealt with within 68 days from the date the arbitration request has been received. Now, in terms of public interest matters for the quarter, okay, these would more or less relate to CCMA interventions in your high-profile, potentially wage-related matters, potentially strike-related matters. The CCMA settled 83%, and in terms of the numbers for the quarter, 29 out of 35 public interest matters. The overall settlement rate at the CCMA in terms of resolving disputes is measured at 74%, which generally sets ourselves a target of 70%, so it's above the target in terms of the settlement rate as well. In terms of the quarter for our dispute management and our outreach services, the CCMA conducted 376 awareness raising activities and capacity building activities, and especially to address your social justice blockages. These activities were conducted over the quarter. In terms of those activities, since over 19,000 people were capacitated to better understand how to use the law and their rights through these various outreach activities that were conducted. Moving on to something that I think is very close to all of us, and particularly with our current economic times, is that the CCMA has saved 41% of jobs of employees who were facing retrenchment. That's a number of 15,787 jobs were saved out of potentially 38,588 employees that were facing retrenchment. These were in respect of matters that were referred to this CCMA. Okay, I'm going to skip the next one, but we in CCMA effect in March this year ran an annual labor conference. This was the second one that dealt particularly with the employment law amendments that came into effect on the 1st of January, and in particular with regard as well to the national minimum wage. Over the period, the CCMA received 114 complaints, and 98 of these complaints were received during the same period in the previous financial year, and all of these complaints were investigated and responses were furnished to the various stakeholders. I'm going to skip the next two slides here, but just in terms of the first one, it just basically gives you an indication on our outreach activities, the split that was mentioned across the various provinces across the country. And then slide 11 as well, it just restates the CCMA strategic priorities that are linked to the government outcomes as well. I'm not going to go into too much detail there. Some of these were already mentioned in terms of the dashboard that was presented. And then maybe just to restate in terms of our priority one, which speaks to the outcome, government outcome for decent employment through inclusive growth. That's on slide 12. CCMA heard 136,857 matters out of 155,351 conciliations. All were heard within a period of 30 days. And 16,669 out of 16,720 arbitration awards were sent to parties by the 14th day. There is a very, very small percentage, which is 0.001% of the awards that were sent to parties slightly out of the 14 days the legislature requires. Very, very small percentage. We've also assisted close on to 4,000 vulnerable workers to enforce and execute CCMA awards through a partnership with the Sheriff's Board as well. Priority two, and speaking to the outcome for decent employment as well, I've mentioned this already, that 41% of jobs were saved of employees that were facing retrenchment of these matters that had come through CCMA processes as well. If we turn to slide 13, and maybe just an indication on the CSMA priority on proactively facilitating collective bargaining, which also contributes to outcome 4 on decent employment through inclusive economic growth. For the quarter, the CCMA dealt with slightly over 1,004 mutual interest or potentially strike-related matters. That number is a slight decline from the same period of the previous financial year, and we settled close on to, or just slightly under, two-thirds of those potentially strike-related matters, your wage disputes. Our success rate, however, in terms of making offers of assistance in your public interest matters is very, very good, and that's been recorded at 83%, and that's owing to the stakeholders of the labour market's willingness to come to the CCMA following an unresolved wage dispute to see if we can further assist them. Honourable Chair, I'm going to pause there. I'm not going to speak to slide 14, and then with your permission, the Chief Financial Officer is going to take us through very briefly and highlight certain aspects on the financial performance of the organisation. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Harun. Morning, Honourable Chair and the members. On the financial section, I'll take you through the last slide, which highlights the overall budget that we've received at the CCMA and how much of that budget we have used. In overall, we received just over R1 billion, and out of that R1 billion, we've used 975 million of it. At 31st of March, we were left with 69 million, and that 69 million that we were left with, which was not utilized, a greater portion of it was actually committed. So it is funds that we were planning to use, or we had already made commitments to use it for the financial year of 31st of March. I think when you look at overall, what is the main reason why not everything that we were allocated was not used? Mainly, it was attributed to timing differences based on our supply chain processes in terms of when we concluded the supply chain processes and when we actually started utilizing the funds. And also, the second other major reason was with regards to the filling of the vacancies. This is the commissioner vacancies, and this is one of those areas where it's a revolving activity across the organization, because we feel, and then there's new vacancies that come across. I think high-level chairperson, that's the issue on the, I mean, that's our presentation on the financials. We'll take questions if there's any, chairperson. Thank you.
We will then, when it's to go that route of questions after each presentation, or we get all our presentations and then we ask questions. Can I just check? I know why people want to ask now, so they're going to leave. So that's the commitment.
Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Minister, my point is that can we plead with our colleagues that we just receive all the presentations? Yes.
Chairperson, there are two issues that arise out of that. One, if the CCMA now has to wait for the rest of the presentations before they can answer, and they could be excused, that's the first thing. The second thing is, I don't want the minister to leave. I don't know what his schedule's like, so at least he could hear what each entity is going. And that's why I wanted to ask now. But I'm going to sit here. I'm not leaving. You can't wish me away.
The minister is not leaving. I don't think CCMA is going to leave. I never got that indication that they are going to present, get questions, and leave. So everybody is going to be here. We then get the presentation, which is dot down your questions, honourable members. Only two people There's only one person that has indicated that she's going to leave, so the rest were here until we finish. Can we get the next presentation, which is going to be NEDLAC? NEDLAC?
Good morning, Chairperson, good morning, committee, and everyone else. We'll also try and be as fast as we can in terms of presenting quarter four. My name is Teboho Tejani, and I'm also with our CFO, Mr. Jonas Shai. Chair, when we presented quarter three, we went through the legislative mandate, which is on slide three of NEDLAC. We also dealt with the objectives in terms of the NEDLAC Act, which is on slide four, just outlining what we are about in terms of, and I'll just go quickly through those bullets: strive to promote the goals of economic growth, participation in economic decision-making, social equity, seek to reach consensus, and conclude agreements on matters pertaining to social and economic policy, consider all proposed labor legislation relating to labor market policy before it is introduced to Parliament, consider all significant changes to social and economic policy before it is implemented or introduced in Parliament, encourage and promote the formulation of coordination policy on social and economic matters. Those will then contextualize the work that we've done in quarter four, which is reflected in slide six, which is performance per program quarter four. As indicated, we have three programs: administration, cooperation, constituency, capacity building. In quarter four in particular, we have planned 31 indicators, 7 for administration, 18 for cooperation, constituency capacity building, we had 6 of those, and we achieved 31 in total. In terms of administration, we achieved 6 out of 7, cooperation 7 out of 18, and in constituency capacity building, we achieved 100%, which is 6 out of 6, which left us on 94% achievement for that particular quarter, basically meaning we had not achieved 2 indicators for that quarter. Slide 7 will outline the challenges and remedial actions that we put in place to address those particular challenges. There are 2 challenges. Quarterly staff performance appraisals for finance staff were not conducted within the 2 months following the end of each quarter, and the reason was due to the suspension of the senior manager, and in terms of addressing that, the acting CFO then took over and conducted performance assessment for those particular staff members, and that was dealt in that manner. Secondly, labor market research report not concluded. We then dealt with that in terms of the research project not be concluded in time due to delays encountered during the consultation process by the chamber. So there was those consultation processes in order to reach consensus and also outline the mandate clearly. So, and Chair, if I may just quickly move to slide 9. In terms of slide 9, bullet 1 basically outlines the work of NEDLAC in terms of its mandate, but I think bullet 2 also outlines how we're going to address or deal with this presentation. Lastly, we just want to emphasize that while NEDLAC does not directly create employment opportunities, it creates an enabling environment to promote economic growth and address the triple challenge of poverty, unemployment, and inequality. And this will be clear in terms of the work that we've embarked on during that quarter. Moving to slide 10, Chair, in terms of the program, dealing with addressing challenges of unemployment and other socioeconomic issues, we're talking specifically the Job Summit, Technical Committee, the JTC, and its subcommittees. In a nutshell, we embarked on 4 key focus areas: economic sector specific interventions, small, medium, and micro enterprises support, education and skills, inclusive growth transformation and inequality, and public and social programs, labor market, and anti-corruption. Chair, if I could just go back to third quarter last week, there was a request from the committee to indicate how NEDLAC is addressing issues pertaining to small businesses. We have submitted a write-up just to give that overview, which is on the side. I think the parliamentary officer has distributed that. But if you look specifically on those key four key areas, bullet two, small, medium, and microenterprise support, that's where NEDLAC goes in and deals with the issues of capacity and addressing the needs of small businesses. Secondly, on national minimum wage task team, we're ensuring that national minimum wage and related legislation is finalized with the view to address inequalities and poverty by ensuring that no employee is paid below the minimum wage in terms of the floor that is set. Slide 11, another program, Financial Sector Transformation Summit Task Team and its subcommittees. Basically, here we're engaging on measures to transform the financial sector towards inclusive economy. Four key focus areas in respect of that. One, market concentration and monopoly in relation to ownership and licensing, support for emerging enterprises and black businesses through procurement enterprises and supplier development. Again, that's the issue that pertains to small businesses, Chair. The role of development finance institutions and state-owned financial institutions in the transformation of financial sector. The role of financial sector charter council and regulatory bodies. On comprehensive social security task team, basically here was to find sustainable long-term resolutions on issues that relate to national social security fund, institutional framework, and the financing model. Here, research agenda has been identified for research to be undertaken in 2019-2020 to aid towards the realization of the above. Quickly moving to slide 12, on the fifth program, sovereign ratings downgrade task team and its subcommittees, namely financial sustainability on ESCOM, measures to address corruption, process for board members to be appointed in state-owned companies or entities, youth employment services, called YES, session on measures to accelerate land reform session on socio-economic impact assessment process. Moving to slide 13, another program for fourth quarter, technical sector liaison committee, namely called TESELICO. The focus here is basically on South Africa's trade relations issues, for example, matters relating to trade relations with European Union and UK after Brexit, here South Africa and South African Customs Union. Dairy and poultry sector engagement on the point 7, basically here was to identify measures to implement and address challenges of dumping of dairy and poultry products which had or have a negative impact on employment in South Africa. Number 8, carbon tax bill, jobs mitigation plan task team. This was on job mitigation and creation of plans due to impact on carbon tax employment, and we're looking at different sectors in terms of the economy on poorer household and worker. Here we developed a report identifying the potential job mitigation and creating plans to address sectors. Number 9, review of employment tax incentive. This was just to review evidence of the impact of the incentives since inception and develop proposals to feed into the review of programs with a view of promoting effectiveness of the ETI. Number 10 on slide 14, custom fraud and illegal imports. The task team was to explore and propose the implementation of measures to prevent and or where not possible, at least curtail custom fraud and illegal imports in support of local economic activities and job creation, amongst others. Number 11, Technical Infrastructure Agencies Task Team. This one, subsequently, among others, was to identify measures that the agencies can use to promote local industrialization and job creation and devise work programs to aid in the implementation of the identified measures. Public Finance and Monetary Policy Chamber, special sessions on unclaimed benefits on slide 15. A special session was held with Financial Sector Authority on unclaimed benefits and default regulations on how FSCA facilitates the process to ensure that unclaimed benefits such as pension funds are known and paid accordingly to beneficiaries, also social partners to make recommendations for implementation. Underlying this session is the need to address poverty. Decent Work Country Program on point 13, The focus there was on the implementation of the South Africa's Decent Work Country Program. And number 14 on EPWP, Extended Public Works Program, in terms of the site visits. These site visits were implemented with a view to verify the accuracy of the progress report submitted by government. These visits also created an opportunity for NEDLAC social partners to engage and submit proposals to ensure that EPW targets of creating work opportunities for the employed are realized. And lastly, number 15, which is a research report specifically on ESCOM business model. This was to facilitate informed debate among the social partners regarding critical issues pertaining to South Africa's electricity supply and the sustainability of ESCOM business model. Future of work in the South African context was to gain understanding on the fourth industrial revolution and its impact in the future of work, and to recommend ways to implement by South Africa and NEDLAC in particular in relation to fourth industrial revolution. And number three, agricultural support programs. The research focused on agricultural support programs in South Africa training partners, and the issue on burial society in South Africa. This was to understand the funeral cover pricing, competition impact of regulatory and legal requirements on funeral insurance providers and customer protection. That will then deal with the indicators that we dealt with in quarter four. And we've also provided a summary of our income and expenditure for NEDLAC. And we just basically outlining, if you look, Chair, in terms of the summary that we provided, which I'll come to, but on slide 19, I just want to correct, there's a finger problem there that we just need to address on slide 19. On goods and services, the figure there in terms of million is supposed to be 25655. It says 25665. Our apologies, it's a typo. Just need to correct that. Deficit surplus, it's supposed to read 5434 as opposed to 5444. And that slide in particular, Chair, it just outlines the revenue in millions in terms of what we've received, and also it outlines compensation of employees and goods and services. That amount in total, Chair, it excludes the 12 million that was allocated for the job summit. If you look at slide 18, we're talking to 33 million as opposed to the 41, because that 41 is made up of the interest that was received. It also in terms of sundry income, and then we're sitting at 34,372 million in terms of our income. So the 12 million for job summit that I've indicated, it is excluded. And in terms of our summary, we are also outlining the total amount that we've used for the job summit. Of the 12 million we received, only 5 million rand was recognized as revenue, with 6 million plus being deferred at year end for activities of the job summit that continued into 2019-2020 financial year, as we are aware that the activities for the job summit are continuing. Chair, if I may stop at that point, and I can take questions for clarification.
We then get the presentation, the next presentation, which is from Productivity SA.
Thank you, Chairperson. My name is Mutunya Mutiba, and I'm with the Chief Financial Officer, Dr. Sabela. I will just you recall that in the previous sitting on the last week, we tried to give a reflection of the broad work that Productivity SA does. We have just provided you that information as additional information for background purposes. And for purposes of today's presentation, I would like to focus first on slide 12, just to give a reflection on the performance. You will realize that we had for quarter four, 12 performance indicators. And out of those, we achieved 4 and failed to achieve 8, which gave a 33% achievement rate. And then if you go to slide 14, we're trying to give a reflection of the performance quarter on quarter. And indeed, quarter 4 was the worst quarter in terms of our performance at 33, as I indicated. And then on slide 16, what we're trying to show the committee is that of those areas, as indicated, the 33% where we have achieved and the 66% where we failed to achieve, we're then giving an account of the 66% as to what happened in that space. If you look at the human resources management program, that's one area where we failed to achieve. We set ourselves a target of 80% and we could only achieve 49%. And the reason there was, by quarter 4, we then realized that because of financial challenges, it was not worth continuing with spending on training programs to the extent that then we stopped particular training that has to do with external service providers and we focused internally. That was a decision that was difficult to take, but we had to move that way in order to avoid overexpenditure on our budget. If you look at the program called Value Chain Competitiveness, that's an area where we also underperformed. We had a target of 25, and we could only achieve 11. But then, again, there, if you look at our performance in that area up to the end of the financial year, we decided that in quarter 4 as well, we should rather stop with operations in that space because we had already achieved the annual target. So service delivery was per se not affected. But it's just that for quarter 4 we had to do very little precisely because of our financial challenges. But then we said, now then that we have achieved in that area, rather we deploy the resources elsewhere. In terms of the turnaround solutions program, for the 2018-19 financial year, in that quarter, you would realize that actually nothing was done. And here, it's more about there was no funds to can run the program. So turnaround solutions as a whole could not be achieved. So the board then took a decision that rather we suspend the program because it is not worth doing anything in that area despite the challenges that we are facing of companies retrenching workers. On slide 17, in the value chain competitiveness area, we planned to have 4 research reports and we could only achieve 2. Again, in the program, in terms of the statistical reports, we planned 1 in quarter 4 and could not achieve any. Here it's just an issue of capacity in the program, but we have since appointed the chief economist, and we are confident that moving forward we'll be in a position to deliver in this area. And the last area is having to do with productivity champions. Again, in this area we decided to cease operations because we had already achieved the targets as per quarter 3, and then you can see that in terms of year to date in the last column, we had planned 200 and we have achieved 217. So in a nutshell, as at the end of the financial year, when it relates to service delivery, we had actually delivered on what we had planned to do. That is, in the areas where we had to service small and medium enterprises. In terms of our financial performance, I will then go to slide 24. And this slide depicts the situation that I was actually painting in terms of the challenge, financial challenges that are facing this entity. You will realize that in terms of budgeted revenue, it was 144 million and we could only secure 87.9 million with a variance of 56 million. And if you look at our expenditure, we had to really constrain and pull back so that we operate within the budget as provided, to the extent that our total expenditure for that period came to 87.7 million. And if you weighed against the revenue, we then are sitting at least a shortfall of 217. The last slide that I would like to focus on, Chair, is slide on 27, just to give you an indication of the audit outcomes. During the financial year, we managed to resolve 95% of the audit findings, and I can indicate that at this point in time, for the 2018-19 financial year, we've got a clean audit, an unqualified audit, to the extent that we have been able to reduce the findings by the auditor from over 20 to only 9 in the financial year. So I think in terms of governance, we have built a solid team that we're able to at least safeguard the interests of the state. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, honourable members. That is those are the presentations from all the entities. Can we then take questions? Honourable Wickram, honourable Card, and honourable Mosele in that order.
May I go ahead, Madam Chair? No, it's working. Oh, well, I've got my technician working on it. Thank you. Madam Chair, are you taking questions then on all three entities at this stage? And that also. Is that correct? Thank you. Okay, well then I'll start with the CCMA, which is the one that started off with. I want to make the comment, obviously, and I normally do about the CCMA, which is the jewel and the crown of the Department of Employment and Labour, and well done to them. I see they've got a little bit of a decline in, if you look at slide 13, I'm going to start at slide 13, I'll go backwards. There's a decline in the mutual interests disputes and the settlement rate. Maybe they can comment, is that as a result of the new legislation? That's possibly the result of that new legislation. And maybe they can comment on it. They've said that there's an 83... I don't know what that... I'll just use my shop steward voice. Can I switch it off? Or are you not allowed to do that? Well, let me try again. Someone else with a phone nearby. Like that? Ah, maybe that's the right. You see, that's why we got the minister here. Switch on the balls, maybe. Thank you. now I'm much happier. Thank you. Thank you very much. Okay, so then if I could go on to get my paperwork back again. Now, I was finished with slide 13. If I can then go to page 3, is slide 5, I think it is. Halfway through this assessment of this fourth quarter, the legislation was changed, and I think we had about 2 months, maybe 3 months, of the new national minimum wage. And maybe you can comment about the extra amount of cases that were referred in terms of the new national minimum wage. But I think more importantly, the change to the legislation was not actually so much the national minimum wage that referred the dispute, but I think it was financial disputes that were referred to the CCMA as opposed to the department. And I presume the department itself should have reported a decline in the amount of cases that came to them, because it was all hived off to the CCMA, and I'd like the CCMA to comment on it. Just in terms of slide 6, page 3, where you said 98% of all registered cases were within the 30 days, I think we need to understand that most of that is of a legal nature, and to hit 98% is absolutely fantastic. I don't know how you did that, because there's all sorts of issues that arise of a technical nature, and to hit 98%, maybe you can share that secret with every other government department in the country, because I don't believe anyone's got anything near that. If I can go to slide 9, in these 3 months, are you telling us that you had almost 200,000 cases referred to you in 3 months? That's January 19 to March 19. Because then that is almost stupendous. It's so fantastic. The other thing is, you settled in just over 2 months, you had finished off all the arbitration cases. I know you set a target for 60 days, but you compare it to the Department of Justice, where they settle most of their, they hear most of their cases within 4 years. So you've got 68 days as opposed to 4 years. Tell us the secret there. How did you do it? And then you've saved the country a lot of money because you settled 83% of the possible strikes that were referred to the CCMA. Again, how did you do that? Because there must be a way in which we could take some, I don't know, some wisdom from that. I see you saved 41% of jobs with people facing retrenchment. I'm not sure how you get that figure, because if people need to retrench, they need to retrench. I'd like you to explain how you actually say you save jobs. Okay, that'll be enough for the CCMA. A lot more, but of course we need to give some big praise to the staff of the CCMA on that particular one. And to Mr. Cameron Moriani, if you can convey the message that he's done really well on this one. If I can move on to NEDLAC, or are you going to take just CCMA questions at this point? Can I move on to NEDLAC? Thank you, Madam Chair. NEDLAC itself, and I know there was lots of, and the report from NEDLAC, lots of good things that they're telling us. And like they say, while if you look at slide 9, while NEDLAC does not directly create employment opportunities, it creates an enabling environment. I'm not sure where they got that from. That sounds like motherhood and apple pie. And maybe you can explain where he somehow creates an enabling environment. I don't understand it. And they also want to refer us in slide 10, again to this national minimum wage. That's history. It was all implemented and history by the time this quarter came in. So I'm not sure what they're relying on in terms of ensuring national minimum wage and related legislation is finalized. It was finalized. Maybe they're dwelling in the history and trying to still bask in the glory of that history. Then also at slide 11, there's lots of motherhood type of statements, which all of it meaning nothing. absolutely nothing, such as their focus areas, market concentration and monopoly in relation to ownership and licensing. It's not their job. I don't know where they got this from. And support for emerging enterprise and black business through procurement and enterprise. I mean, maybe they're training themselves and they have a nice talk shop and they can explain what they're doing there, but that doesn't translate into anything out in the economy. Like at page slide 12, the same thing, the financial sustainability of Eskom. I mean, that's an oxymoron of note. Maybe they can explain why they're talking about the financial sustainability of Eskom when there's no sustainability at all. But maybe they've made it worse. If I can look at slide 13, to review evidence of the impact of the incentive since inception and to develop proposals to feed into the review of the program, the view of remote effectiveness of ETI. I mean, that doesn't make sense. I mean, even in English, it doesn't make sense. I don't know what they're on about, but I don't know if they maybe had, again, another talk shop on that. And then at slide 14, the task team was to explore and propose the implementation of measures to prevent customs fraud and whatever. That's not their job either. I don't know what they were doing with that. Maybe someone decided it was a good topic to discuss, and they had the discussion, and it was good fun, and we all went on into it. And I can make that comment about slide 15 and 16 as well, so I'm not sure what this is all about. Just quickly on Productivity SA, I only make one comment, and that seems to be the Cinderella of the department. Everyone's keeping them very poor and making sure that they don't do too much work, when in fact we need more and more work from Productivity South Africa. Thank you for listening to me, and thank you to my colleague for allowing me to use his mic. Yes.
Thanks, Chair. I've got a general question to all presenters, and perhaps even the Minister since he's here, followed by specific questions to the CCMA and NEDLAC. My first general question is whether you've all had an opportunity to read the excellent document released by Treasury yesterday entitled Economic Transformation, Inclusive Growth and Competitiveness. And if so, do you support some of the proposals mentioned in that paper regarding labour? There is one proposal, for example, on governments considering full or partial exemptions for small business from certain labour regulations, most particularly the extension of bargaining council agreements to small businesses. And I wonder whether we could hear from you on whether you endorse those excellent ideas. Then secondly, to the CCMA
the question, I'm not answering to the Minister, but the question that you're referring to, unfortunately, I don't know whether all of us have been exposed to that paper. Are you referring to the paper that was circulated to cabinet?
I'm referring to the paper that's available on the Treasury website. Yes.
On the cabinet website. Very fast, eh?
The Minister looks like he knows what I'm talking about.
Okay.
And then, Chair, on the CCMA, what are you doing to reduce the time taken to deal with arbitration cases to 60 days? I noticed that you are quite close at 68 days. Secondly, and this has been covered to some extent by my colleague, what impact is the introduction of the national minimum wage having on the CCMA's caseload? And are your officials sufficiently equipped and capacitated to deal with the enforcement of the new legislation? And allied to that, are you in a position to give us an indication what sort of impact the national minimum wage legislation is having on small businesses? And then to NEDLAC, on slide 20, you note that you incurred a deficit for the year primarily due to overexpenditure on compensation of employees and budgeting weaknesses. I wondered whether you could tell us exactly what those budgeting weaknesses are and what is being done to address them. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Nansele.
Thank you, Chair. Honorable Chair and Honorable Members of the Department led by Honorable Minister. Chair, the questions, the first one is with regard to CCMA. I think the report is fine, but there are these concerns. Some of them have been covered. But I want to specifically go to the questions where, with regard to the cases. The success rate is quite phenomenal, but I just wanted to check if perhaps CCMA can help us just to understand how many of those cases have been taken on review. Because too often most of the cases at CCMA have ended up on review with the dire consequences to those who have been deemed to have succeeded, either winning or losing those cases. The second point with regard to CCMA is with regard to the turnover in commissioners, and if perhaps they can also take us on board is how far, for instance, with regard to that. If there is no turnover, it's fine. Yes. So that we have the totality of the picture that accompanies the success rate. On the question of the productivity in South Africa is with regard to the funding model, because it looked like there is a problem with regard to the extent to which the funding model that they have adopted, the consequence relating to the extent of their budgeting, which is not met, they are underfunded. What may be the challenge, if they can elaborate on that? Lastly, on NEDLAG, the report is fine, Chair, except the concern that the progress or the reports don't talk to progress made to the programs that NEDLAG has adopted. The question then arises as to the extent of the implementation of those programs. We note that they talk to the outcomes of the job summit and the expected implementation and so on, but however, it does not talk to the extent of those programs. How far have they been implemented? If then they can maybe just talk briefly on the implementation side and what challenges, so that we can be able to understand the fuller picture. The question is relevant, particularly to the question that has just been raised with regard to the Treasury document on job creation, so that we are able to balance the response or the debate to say the extent, for instance, of the interventions that arising from NEDLAG processes with regard to job crisis, how do they relate to the proposals that are coming from the document that is coming from National Treasury? If we can just get that totality of the explanation. Thank you.
On the National Treasury documents, I will request the Secretariat, if you are able to get that, print that for all members. But if I was listening to TV this morning, because I said that paper is not yet a cabinet paper, it's a paper that is circulated for comments. Whether those comments are public comments, but it's a paper, so it will then be important that all members, and then members will then discuss in their various areas, either as an individual or as study groups, but it will be important that it touches more on our sector, among other things. Two, if Minister, it won't be a cumbersome work, is that one would appreciate in the that CCMA, the cases that they have been able to attend to and resolve them, from which sector is more, which sector are you more, or can I rephrase, can we get an information sector by sector in terms of the cases? I'm very interested. Remember that it's a general, so that when we are then able to when we are observing or monitoring the sectors, which sectors workers are more coming to the CCMA? Is it in the public service? Is it in the industrial? Is it retail, farms, and whatever? And my question is also about gender and age. That's why I'm trying to say I hope it's not going to be a cumbersome work, but please, I would appreciate if you can get that. The last one is that I have observed there's no uniformity in terms of reporting in progress. I'll make an example. Productivity SA in quarter four, it is reporting on performance per strategic objective. And then it also reported on performance per program. CCMA is the opposite. NEDLAC is also the opposite. So that's why my approach is, can there be uniformity? So that we are not, please, we have noted that, and I'd appreciate if then that can be corrected. If you are comfortable in responding now, it's fine. Tea has been served. If you want to, if we can just have 5 minutes so that you sort yourselves out, we just grab tea, come back, and then we allow you to respond. Is that fine? Just 5 minutes for tea break. Okay? The problem is that once a health worker, always a health worker, you can't help others.